KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting the new 2025 Camry with refined design and performance. Visit your local Toyota dealer to learn more about all the features the new 2025 Camry offers. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, the personal story of a man fighting prostate cancer and his efforts to raise awareness, plus the latest therapies to save lives. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. About 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer during their lifetime. It is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths for American men, behind lung cancer. That's according to the American Cancer Society. And Black men are the most likely to be diagnosed. But early detection can save lives. That really starts with, you know, spreading awareness and knowing what to look for. Well, joining me now to share his story with us is Jerry McCormick. Jerry, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So glad to have you on. First, how are you doing today?
I'm a bit nervous, to be honest. My surgery is first thing in the morning, and tomorrow begins a new chapter in my life. So it's a little bit nerve-wracking, but I'll be okay.
Wow. Well, take me back to your diagnosis in September. What do you remember about that day?
So I remember, well, let me take you back a little bit further. Yeah, early in September, I went to the doctor for a different reason. And she said, well, while you're here, we probably need to do PSA, which is prostate-specific antigen test, and it's a blood test. And I said, sure, no problem. And then she called me back and said, hey, we spotted something. We need to do an MRI. They did an MRI. That led to a biopsy. And then I was, you know, really just kind of getting really nervous. And so I took a little trip out of town to go to a concert. And on the way to the concert, the email came with the lab results. And so I was like, uh-oh, here it is. And I decided just to go ahead and go to the concert and then look afterwards. And then I looked at the lab results. And, you know, as a former journalist, I started going on WebMD and YouTube trying to figure out what everything was. And then a few days later, I went to the urologist and she told me that I had prostate cancer. And I just went blank, because that's something I thought I would never say or never hear. And so it's a bit scary, but I'm going to be okay.
Right. Well, you mentioned your surgery is coming up tomorrow. Are you comfortable telling us more about that? Because there are many different avenues you could have taken there.
Yeah. So there's basically two things. You could have radiation or you could have surgery where they actually remove the prostate. And so for me, I'm 57 years old. I don't want to have kids. And I just wanted to be honest, to get it over with and move on with my life. Now, there's a chance I still could have some lasting effects from the surgery. And there could be a chance I could still use or need additional radiation. But right now, the surgery is my best option. And I thought it over, talked it over with loved ones. And then I decided that was the best route for me.
You know, looking back, did you have any symptoms?
Yeah, a little. I was going to the bathroom a lot overnight. And I just thought, oh, this is old man problems. I'm getting older. And then one night I got up 12 times to use the bathroom. And I thought, OK, now I'm not drinking this much water. And I knew something was up. And so I'm glad my doctor had the wherewithal to say, hey, we probably need to test you for this, because I didn't ask for this test. You know, I didn't know to ask for this test. And that's why I'm trying to use my voice and any platform to tell men, all men, to please make sure you go and get checked, because you just never know what's lurking in your body.
Yeah, that awareness for both men and practitioners is so important. Prior to your diagnosis, what did you know about prostate cancer?
I knew some people who had it, like celebrities, like Montel Jordan has it right now. And I saw him on the Today Show talking about it, and I thought, oh, that's really sad. I didn't realize that it could be me. And I knew Al Roker had it, but as far as just like day-to-day stuff, I didn't know much about it. And now I consider myself an armchair doctor with it because I've read all the books, I've read and investigated and watched the videos. And so I'm going in tomorrow pretty prepared, as well as prepared as I can be.
I mean, was prostate cancer something you talked about with friends and family?
No, not at all. It doesn't even run in my family. I did read the statistic that 1 in 6 black men will be diagnosed with this. And I come from a family of 6 boys. Well, my other brothers didn't have it. I'm the youngest, and so the odds were not in my favor.
Well, as you mentioned, black men do face higher risk of prostate cancer and much more likely to die of the disease. What do black men, you think, need to know, need from their doctors and even each other to detect cancer early?
Well, I'm trying to start a support group, and I'm working with UCSD to try to form one specifically for Black men and to raise awareness. But to answer your question, I think, people are afraid to go to the doctor because they're afraid of bad news. But the thing of it is you need to know what's going on with your body. You absolutely do. And don't be afraid to speak up and advocate for yourself. The thing of it is I'm lucky that I have a really good doctor, but what if I didn't? This could be in my body and for years, and 5 years from now I could be deathly ill and can't figure out why. So my message is, every time you go to the doctor, ask them, hey, is there something I need to know? Is there something I need to get checked? We haven't done this in a while. Can we do this? And just advocate for yourself.
Well, also, one reason black men are at higher risk of dying from prostate cancer is because it's typically diagnosed at more advanced stages. What are some of the reasons for that?
People just don't go to the doctor, Jade. I mean, that's just it. They're afraid. I go to the doctor as often as I can because I want to make sure that I know what's going on with my body. And, it's really sad because this is treatable, if you catch it early enough. And unfortunately, a lot of people, they're catching it too late, and then it's to the point where they die. And this is something that if people were just stay on top of their health, stay on top of their doctors, that this could be prevented.
So it's not necessarily a more aggressive form of cancer that black men are dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to have it more, but at the same time, it is treatable. I'm lucky. I mean, mine isn't that bad. I mean, this is a club I don't want to belong to be honest, but I'm here. And so I'm glad I'm doing something about it instead of just waiting to see what will happen.
Well, speaking of clubs, as you mentioned, you are in talks with UC San Diego to form a support group that targets the Black community. Talk about why that's important to you.
So I am of the belief if I know something, everybody should know, right? And I guess it's the former journalist in me. It's like, tell everything you know. And so for me, the black population here is 6%, right? And so that means, and I'm not going to do math, but that means more than me is suffering, not suffering, excuse me, I'm going to change that. More than me has this condition right now. And so there's somebody sitting out here who's probably listening to the show that might have prostate cancer and may not even know it. And so that's why I want to form this group to advocate, get the word out, get people checked, get people tested so that they know. Because, I hate to use this analogy, but I mean, knowledge is power. And the more that you know, the more you can do something about it.
Where should people look for more information about this
We're in
group?
the very early stages of this, but I do know that they're going to be having a prostate cancer symposium at the end of January, and we're making plans to be in black spaces to educate people and let them know that we're trying to form this group.
Well, Jerry, it's really admirable that you've taken a diagnosis and really turned it into motivation for helping others. What is your advice for listeners who are hoping to spread awareness among friends and family but don't know where to start?
start at the beginning, tell everybody you know, every man you know, just, and it doesn't have to be an awkward conversation. It can be, hey, I heard on the news that black men or men have a higher risk of prostate cancer. Have you been checked lately? Or maybe the next time you go to the doctor or they're headed to the doctor, say, hey, make sure you ask them about your prostate, or a PSA test. If we stay silent, then nothing changes. That's why I'm out here trying to, spread the word so that even if one other person decides to go get checked today, then my work is done.
What kind of support have you received since your diagnosis and efforts to spread awareness?
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm trying to form this group because when I got diagnosed, I immediately went to see what kind of resources we had here in San Diego. And I noticed there wasn't any specifically targeted to black men. And so I've been online Facebook groups, and I've also been talking to a group up in Riverside. They have been super supportive. They've called to check on me to make sure that I'm okay. And during this whole journey, I actually learned that three of my close male friends had prostate cancer and they never said a word. And I asked them why, and they said, well, it's personal, it's private. And I just thought to myself, well, yeah, it is. But at the same time, had you said something, it might have triggered something within me to go get checked. So I decided I'm just going to be open, honest, and transparent with my journey and let people know because you have to, you, this is a scary time. I'm not going to try to, pretend to be brave. It's scary. But at the same time, you just need to let people know that this is something that if they take action, it's treatable.
Well, Jerry, it is scary. And so I'm curious, for those looking to support people like you who are going through a cancer journey, what advice would you give them?
Pay attention. Give us space when we need it and give us a hug when we need that too, because your emotions are all over the place. One day you're like, I'm going to beat this and I can, fight this off. And then one day it's just like, am I going to die? I don't know what's going to happen. And for control freaks like myself, that's super scary. But I decided to control what I could control, which is telling people about it, letting people know, getting people aware of this because it's not something that we talk about every day. Like, for example, October Breast Cancer Awareness Month, pink everywhere, right? But with men, we don't talk about our health. We don't talk to each other about, hey, brother, are you good? Have you been checked? Have you been tested? We don't do that. And we need to change that because our silence is killing people.
Well, I know your story will certainly inspire more people to turn to that early screening. I've been speaking with Jerry McCormick. Jerry, thank you for sharing your story, and we're all rooting for you.
Thank you, Jade. I appreciate it.
Still ahead, a doctor joins us to talk about early screening for prostate cancer and the latest therapies. We're back after the break.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. We're continuing our conversation about prostate cancer, the most common cancer diagnosis for men in the United States. It's also the second leading cause of cancer-related death among men after lung cancer. We just heard from Jerry McCormick about his recent diagnosis and his efforts to spread awareness about early detection. And now we'll hear a medical perspective from Dr. Ramdev Konaheti, director of the Urinary Oncology Program at Scripps Cancer Center. He's also a surgeon with Scripps Clinic. Dr. Konaheti, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have you here. And that's Konaheti. Sorry for that mispronunciation. What are some signs and symptoms that typically point to prostate cancer in patients?
Well, unfortunately, prostate cancer is usually not symptomatic. The overwhelming majority of people that get diagnosed with prostate cancer do so by virtue of a blood test that gets done. And if we do a blood test called a PSA that is abnormal, that prompts us to investigate further with various blood or urine tests that are secondary tests or imaging with typically an MRI. And ultimately leading, if we're still suspicious, to a biopsy, which is what clinches the diagnosis.
And our previous guest mentioned frequent urination. Is that not typical?
It's not. It can be a reason to also investigate for prostate cancer, which can be coexistent. But the most common cause of urinary problems in men after their 50 years old is benign enlargement of the prostate. But as a urologist plans out what options for treatment might be feasible for those urinary symptoms as part of the process, they will often screen for prostate cancer because that plays into how they determine what's best for the patient.
And there are, you know, a few ways of screening for this cancer. And you mentioned the PSA test. Is that the best and most effective test when it comes to screening for prostate cancer?
Well, it's definitely the most ubiquitous test, and it's the most common initial screening tool. But it is true that the PSA is an imperfect test, meaning a lot of things can make it abnormal that have nothing to do with cancer. And historically, we used to use a cutoff of roughly 4. If anybody with a number above 4, we would automatically biopsy them or look for prostate cancer. But that led to a lot of overdiagnosis and overdetection of prostate cancer in people who were not necessarily likely to succumb to the disease. So nowadays, we do a better job of using it as a piece of a larger puzzle where we take into consideration the trend in their PSA level over time, their underlying symptoms, their ethnicity, their age and overall life expectancy, because often prostate cancer can be a slow growing condition. And some people are better off just watching it or not treating it as opposed to doing something, because any treatment for it runs the risk of diminishing a person's quality of life. And we certainly don't want to do that if we're not helping them live longer by treating it.
Very interesting. In your view, how often should men be screened for prostate cancer if they're otherwise healthy?
If they're otherwise healthy, really, I take into consideration a person's life expectancy and their ethnicity. But people who do have risk factors for prostate cancer, like a family history or certain ethnic groups, I will recommend that they have a PSA blood test annually. After the age of 50, until they reach a point in their lifetime where they have less than a 5 to 10 year life expectancy. And I typically don't try to make those decisions for my patients. I work with them so they can decide when it's appropriate to stop. But for other people who have no risk factors, the sort of national guidelines from various major societies recommend doing it no more than once every other year after or between the ages of 50 and roughly 75.
You mentioned quality of life issues that can arise from someone who does get treatment for prostate cancer. Can you talk me through a few of those?
Sure. Depending on the severity of the prostate cancer and what all needs to be done. Some individuals can get surgery to have their prostate removed. Some people can get radiation to the prostate. Some people have to also get something called hormone therapy, where we manipulate a person's hormones to try and suppress the cancer. None of these things are a free lunch, meaning they can result in side effects. Whether we do surgery or give radiation to the prostate, that can result in urinary problems. For men who are still sexually active, it can take away their ability to engage in sexual intercourse. And for folks who have to go on some kind of hormonal manipulation, it can reduce their energy levels, give them fatigue, give them mood disturbances, difficulty concentrating. So there are a lot of potential impacts on a person's overall quality of life that really need to be carefully considered as it relates to their, again, their life expectancy and the severity of the cancer itself, because at some point you're sort of playing an odds game and saying, okay, if you're anticipating living this many additional years, it is worth it for you to treat this. Alternatively, if you have many other health problems and the odds are that other things are likely to take your life over time, you're better off not treating this, because we don't want to reduce your quality of life with the remaining time you have.
Well, have there been any new advances in terms of treatment in the last few years?
Absolutely. There are all kinds of new advances that are occurring in every aspect of this condition, whether it be the diagnosis of it, the treatment of it, or even the monitoring of it. Some of the more exciting advances are generally in the area where people have more advanced disease, and there previously have been limited options, but more options have been coming to fore. Specifically, for example, at our institution at Scripps, we do something called theranostics, where if you have a scan of your whole body that indicates evidence of spread of the prostate cancer, we can then give you a special treatment that gets into your veins and specifically goes to those parts of the body where the cancer exists to try and suppress it or even kill it. And so that's a very exciting development that we didn't previously have. Previously, with pictures, we can map out where the cancer is, but now we can use that map to target things way more effectively than ever before on a molecular level.
Wow. And the death rate from prostate cancer has declined significantly over the past few decades. I would imagine some of those therapies may be why. But talk about the factors that have contributed to that decline.
It is true that the death rate of prostate cancer has declined over time when we look back. A lot of that has to do with the advent of the PSA blood test, which occurred in roughly the 1990s. And we were able to identify prostate cancers earlier and ultimately give people treatment before things got out of hand. There was a little bit of an uptick in the death rate around the 2010s, because as I mentioned earlier in this conversation, the use of the PSA ultimately resulted in people being overdiagnosed and overtreated. And so we had a pendulum swing the other way, where a lot of physicians really stopped checking a PSA on people because they felt like it would cause more harm than good. But that pendulum has once again swung back and become a little more centered, where we're more thoughtful about how we utilize the PSA test and who we utilize it on. So it gives us a better ability to really cherry pick the people who are going to benefit from treatment and avoid overtreating those who won't, all combined with continued medical and technological innovation that has occurred, where even people who are at the end of the rope, so to speak, don't necessarily have to be, and they have additional options.
Earlier this hour, we talked about racial disparities within diagnosis trends. What are some of the factors driving those disparities?
That's a good question. We don't entirely know, meaning we know that men of African ethnicity seem to do worse as it relates to prostate cancer even when adjusted for issues like socioeconomic status or access to healthcare, meaning even if a person has easy access to doctors and healthcare, if they're African ethnicity, they do seem to have slightly worse prognosis compared to individuals who are not. Biologically, exactly why that occurs remains a question to the medical community. But to that point, we try and be more vigilant about individuals of that ethnicity so we can make sure we're not missing things. Some of that historically has been related to access to care. There are also certain cultures or individuals who know that this is a very sensitive part of their body. The prostate is a sexual organ, and so they're not necessarily keen on going to see a doctor to talk about those issues because they don't want anybody doing anything to them in that part of their body. Some of it has been related to certain ethnic groups and a lack of confidence or trust in the medical system because of historical events that have occurred. So there are a lot of things that play into it, but as I said, even when you control for those factors and those are not part of the conversation, in people who have similar access to care, the prognosis can be worse for African ethnicity individuals.
Well, just before we go quickly, what are some ways we can all do our part to spread awareness about prostate cancer among our friends and family members?
Well, certainly being able to talk about things, it is not uncommon for men as men age to have urinary problems, to verify that the men in your life are seeing a doctor on a regular basis, at least annually, for a health checkup, and really just removing stigmas about that part of the body so that people can increase their willingness to address anything that might pop up or even questions they might have. So they're talking about it with friends or family or both.
I've been speaking with Dr. Ramdev Kanajeti, director of the Urinary Oncology Program at Scripps Cancer Center and surgeon with Scripps Clinic. Dr. Kanajeti, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfiresafety.